Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Anthony Anderson, Delmarie Cobb, Mary Hartigan, and Charles Lipson. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. And if you would like to tweet us a comment, it's @Dumo. And again, we're on the World Wide Web live, coast to coast, border to border, and around the world live. Full 2 hours on the internet each and every Sunday night. And again, we have lots to talk about. The big political news in the country this afternoon, Hillary Clinton has made it official. It was a tweet. She did it with a tweet. And the tweet called the attention that she is running for president of the United States. It was then followed by a two-minute video that she presented. She actually wasn't in the video very much. But again, in the course of that video, she said, Americans have fought their way back from tough economic times, but the deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top. Everyday Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion. So I'm hitting the road to earn your vote because it's your time, and I hope you'll join me in this journey. So Hillary is officially in. I don't think it surprised too many people. Delmarie Cobb, you're one of our Democrats this evening. Your reaction not only to the announcement, the way in which the announcement was announced.
Well, she sent out a tweet, but as she said, she's going to go to meet with people and do retail politicking. So she plans to go out and actually talk to people throughout the country, and starting with Iowa.
Would you acknowledge that when she talks about talking to everyday people, this will be a rare opportunity because she normally doesn't necessarily talk to everyday people because of the amount of money that she charges for a speech?
Well, it goes back to the fact that she's campaigning, and when she campaigned last time, she did talk to everyday people.
Okay, but in between, she spent several hundred dollars, several hundred
thousand
dollars.
Talks to everyday people. I met her, and I'm an everyday person after she was campaigning.
Okay. Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, your reaction to the announcement, and again, the method of the announcement.
I'm a more weekend person than an everyday person. You know, when she says she's going to go out there and be authentic, I'm reminded of that old story about Hollywood, that the key is sincerity, and when you've learned to fake that, you've really got it made. I think that she's really trying very hard at this early stage to frame her campaign in a way that's different from the way that she framed it last time. I want to earn your support. I want to go out there. I'm not the inevitable. She is the inevitable, unless she stumbles very badly. But she's approaching it differently. I think that's smart.
Mary Hartigan is our other Democrat. Mary, your reaction to her announcement, which I'm sure you were cheering that she was announced.
But yes.
She's not 100% up your alley, is she?
Well, I want to be the pressure from her left. That I think that there are a lot of things in today's money-driven politics where very far right-wing people are driving the conversation. And so I would like to have it be a centrist conversation. And I think that Hillary can really do that. And, I think some of the criticisms that people have to say about her are criticisms that people have had to say about me in my professional life, which is the people that I work with really like me. But maybe do I come across when you walk down the street as somebody who people are going to flock to and see? Maybe not so much.
Anthony,
so she really needs to get out there and talk to people one-on-one.
Anthony Anderson is a Republican tonight. Anthony, your reaction to again, it didn't surprise you, but as a candidate, how formidable is she going to be for a Republican?
Hillary Clinton is going to be a very formidable candidate. I mean, most Republicans, for the most part, they think that Hillary is the best opportunity for them to get to the White House because she's such a polarizing figure. But again, Hillary has name recognition. Most individuals know her. She has a track record, whether you like it or not. She's been ambassador. She's been senator to New York. And so it's not as though she doesn't have a track record to go on, whether it's international, foreign policy, or domestic policy.
But her unfavorable ratings, Delmarie, are considerably higher than they were 8 years ago or 7 years ago when she ran. Does that concern you, or is it because of this polarity that Anthony was referencing?
Well, you know, she's always been they've always been polarizing in that you either like the Clintons or you don't. I mean, it's just the way it is. And I'm not, you know, I don't support somebody because I want to have a beer with them. I could care less about that. I support them based on their issues and where they stand on the issues, and that's why I supported her last time, and that's why I'm going to support her this time.
I was a little bit surprised today. Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, very progressive, who ran her campaign for the U.S. Senate in New York. I was surprised that when asked whether he was going to endorse her, he backed away from that. I mean, it was very odd. He said, well, I want to see who all the other candidates are. But it seems to me that was sort of a misstep. It sort of stepped on her announcement today.
I wonder if his position is very similar to yours. When you were saying that you wanted to pressure him from the left, a populist direction, Anthony and I talked earlier about Elizabeth Warren before we came on, yeah, who has a lot of appeal to some people.
But she's not going to run.
Well, she's not going to run, but the people in the party who represent that wing of the party would like to push Hillary more in that direction. And the problem that they have is that if she's not seriously contested in the primary, there'll be no pressure on her. The same issue came up in the Republicans on the other side.
But,
right?
what about Bernie Sanders? I mean, there is a bona fide progressive. He's socialist. He's caucuses with the Democrats. He is considering running for president, and you can't get anyone who's, I think, more progressive out there than Bernie Sanders. Is he a viable candidate in your view, Mary?
Oh, please. I mean, you must be joking.
No, I'm not.
I mean, no.
What? Why?
Well, for national presence, name recognition, he won't be taken seriously by people like you, and he doesn't have a lot of money. So, I mean, you know, right. I mean, he doesn't have a big dollar backer.
But he says all the right things that many progressives would love to hear, and yet you dismiss him either because he's too old or he's from Vermont or he has this socialist tag. But if you want a real progressive, he's there. And he's not reluctant. Del Marie?
Well, I mean, I call myself a progressive as well, and I still support Hillary. I supported her from the beginning.
Right.
And mainly it's because of her history, her body of work. It's not necessarily because of right today. And it was also during 2008, she was the only one who was talking about an urban agenda. Of the two candidates, she was the only one. And that was the reason I supported her in 2008.
The only problem with Hillary is up to this point has been her Achilles heel. And that's their inability to be transparent with the general public on any level, whether when she was a United States senator or when she was an ambassador. So if she can get over that hump of being non-transparent with the American people, then maybe, just maybe, she can get over the hump of becoming president.
And also when she says that the deck is stacked in favor of those at the top, and she has been, and Bill has been, they have been very cozy with those people at the top. I mean, they're the ones that brought big money donors to the Democratic Party. And that's one of the reasons why he was elected.
Well, Bruce,
twice.
Don't forget, at what point?
We got to pause. Save your comments. 1-800-723-8289, wherever you're listening. This may be the first opportunity for people listening nationally to react to the announcement today that Hillary Clinton is running for president of the United States. Give us a call.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Welcome on back in Chicago. We are talking about the strengths and weaknesses of Hillary Clinton. And Charles, you wanted to make a point. You think there's some real strong weaknesses that she has to overcome.
When Del Marie was pointing to her body of work, I actually think that's more problematic. I think Hillary has a lot of strengths and a lot of weaknesses. And I think most people, her supporters and her opponents, would agree on the list of what's a strength, what's a weakness. But I would just say she has a really strong resume, but not a very strong body of work. She herself was not able to name her major achievements. And her biggest administrative post, which was the State Department, links her very intimately to a failed Obama foreign policy. So I think her body of work is actually quite problematic.
Well, that's your definition of body of work. My definition of body of work goes all the way back to the issues that she has been associated with. I'm not looking at a scorecard to say what she achieved or didn't achieve. I'm looking at the people and the organizations that she was a part of, starting with when she left college.
That's a good point.
Well, look, I don't want to follow it. Because of that dedication and focus, which brought you to the campaign, how successful has she been in dramatically changing the life for those that she now wants to speak for that may have been left behind? Because for 8 years, her husband was the president of the United States. For a portion of that time, Democrats controlled Congress. They had the ability and the reins of power to do a lot. But some would say, especially if you're still in that sector of life or you're on that socioeconomic ladder and maybe you're a couple of rungs down, they may say, well, they had power and she didn't do a lot with it.
Are we talking about when Clinton was the president or when Obama was
both.
The president?
I would say both. She certainly was more influential when her husband was president. I mean, I can't say that you know.
I don't know what all she did behind the scenes when her husband was president. What I do know is that when Bill Clinton was president, it was one of the most successful presidencies in my lifetime in terms of people doing well. Everybody I know did well under Bill Clinton when he was president.
Even the lower economic class.
Everybody did well after him. Everybody did poorly. It was like somebody pulled the rug out from under them.
Were people doing well during the
administration? For the most part, Bruce, especially in the state of Illinois, if you look around, you saw the landscape. I mean, people were employed. Investment was flush. Homes were being built in the states across this country. And so, yeah, I agree with Del Mar that under Bill Clinton, whether you like him or not, it seems as though the economy was doing well. And it wasn't until after the seventh year or in the last year of George Bush that the economy started going downward. So, I mean, it is what it is at this point. He gets credit because it happened on his watch.
One of the things that every show talked about today, they talked about polls that suggest that she has an issue with trustworthiness, that in some key early states, her polls are not well when it comes to trustworthiness. How does she deal with that, in your view, Mary?
Be herself. I think she's very trustworthy. I don't have – that is not an issue for me. In fact, I think her biggest opponent right now is the 24/7 news cycle where you have to make up something to talk about.
But you say, Mary, you want her to be herself. But look at what happened when she was asked about Benghazi when she was like, well, what difference does it make? Even at the American lives were lost. And when you say be herself, that is Hillary Clinton in the flesh. So is that a person that you want to come a little bit more forward as we go along in this whole politics thing, in this race for president?
See, I think that from my personal experience and, you know, being a Bachelor of Science in Foreign Service from Georgetown, mm-hmm. being a diplomat means being out on the street with people, not in a fortress. Mm-hmm. And it's a dangerous thing to do. And if you listen to the whole clip of what she said is, we need to put ourselves out there.
Right.
And if you get killed, or that you get hurt, or you get attacked.
But she made a statement that was incomprehensible. She said, what difference does it make? Now, when lives are being lost, American or otherwise, when a person makes a statement like that, especially that type of individual, and she wants to be president now, you're saying that because of the situation that most people find themselves in, when she was Secretary of State, that's okay to think that way?
What I'm saying is that if I were out on the street in Syria as a representative of the American people, it wouldn't matter whether I got shot as a, you know, by X person or Y person. The thing that matters is what America does about it. And that was her point. What is America going to do about it?
The question that I think people have to answer is, first of all, one of the most memorable campaign spots by Hillary Clinton when she was running against Barack Obama, she was talking about his inexperience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was the 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. phone call. She got the proverbial 3 a.m. phone call.
We don't know what she said.
When she was Secretary of State. When she was Secretary of State. And if you look at that particular time, in every other moment in American political history, certainly that I can remember, when there was an international incident, granted the president may have spoken, but the Secretary of State always was there to speak. She was nowhere to be found. It was Susan Rice who became the spokesperson. She was the one that was sent out to give the bogus, the talking point questions. It wasn't Hillary Clinton. Why not? Did you ever ask yourself? This was her department. This was her employees who were killed, and she was not to be found. Did you ever ask yourself, why not? Did it ever bother you?
No.
Why not?
Because that's not the way the system works.
You are the head of it. What system? What do you mean?
The American political system, the American democratic system, the politics, the media.
Mary, come on.
But you just seem so dismissive of the whole.
Let's be honest here. If three park rangers were murdered, wouldn't you expect the Secretary of Interior to be out there talking about his employees or her employees? Right. It didn't happen with her.
If they had been rescued totally successfully, do you think she would have been missing that weekend? Under no circumstances. She would have been on every program. We don't know why about all sorts of things about Benghazi. We don't know why the State Department turned down the request for protection. We don't know what Hillary Clinton communicated that night. She won't tell us, and we don't have any transparency on all of her emails, nor did she sign the documents that said that nobody asked her to, or she declined to sign the documents that she had turned over all relevant items belonging to the government and had none in her possession. She couldn't have signed that because she actually had them in her possession.
But in fairness to Hillary, Charles, I think that same document that you're referring to, the previous Secretary of State, which was Condoleezza Rice, didn't sign.
But we don't know that she had anything.
Okay. But there
we
were other Secretaries of State that didn't sign that same document.
That may be true, but they did not have really critical documents.
And
you have
that?
To trust because they didn't communicate.
Oh, so you trust them, but not Mrs. Clinton.
That's absolutely correct. Uh-huh. And I think that
So you trust torturers? You trust people
who
are...
When you say torturers, Mary, who are you referring to as torturers?
People who supported the torture policy of George W. Bush.
You would call, like, Colin Powell a torturer.
Condoleezza Rice a torturer?
Yes.
Dumery.
Totally different spirit.
Want to weigh in on this?
Well, there are a lot of questions about it.
Right.
Many of them we don't know the answers to.
Right.
So I'm not going to sit up here and speculate about what was done and what wasn't done, because we know that all of this is going to come out in the campaign. We know this is all fodder for the campaign.
As a curious person, and it comes out of journalism, your background, as well as politics, is it curious to you that in the lost email story, that the emails that day, leading up to that day, and following that day, for a period of time, those were some of the emails that were deleted. Are you curious about that?
I'm curious about everything. And I know that there are journalists who are out here who are digging and digging and digging beyond the fact that we know there's opposition research by the Republicans on it. So if there's anything more to come out on it, we will know it.
Is it curious to you, Mary? You're a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
You're a lawyer. Are you curious that in the single biggest incident of her secretariat, she deleted information that conceivably could have been related to that.
I actually haven't really been following it that much, so I can't really
tell. You haven't been following what?
The minutia of the timeline, because when you're talking about this kind of stuff, you're talking about, like, okay, hour one, what happened?
Does destroying 30,000 emails concern you as an officer of the court?
She wasn't under subpoena. There was no lawsuit.
She wasn't under subpoena.
The court of public opinion, Mary.
We're talking
about the court of public opinion. What does your gut tell you if someone destroys 30,000 emails?
That she's got a lot of spam in her inbox.
Oh God, Mary, not say it ain't so. I mean, here's a person that's a cabinet member, and she has a private server in her own home in Chappaqua, New York, and she's destroying documents at that. And you think that she's only up and up, and she's totally transparent? Is that what you're trying to say? Because you just called Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. You said that they were, you know, terrorists.
They were, right, because they were in charge of the policy at the time when it was a regular policy of the Bush-Cheney administration to question people under harsh methods for weeks, months. It took them months
question
to even
who
ask.
Were committing acts of treason.
No, actually,
acts against terrorism against this country.
They hurt people. They hurt people for weeks.
Back to Hillary.
1-800-723-8229 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly from Chicago.
Hi, I'm Chris Beery.
And I'm Barbara Pinto. Next time on In the Loop, a controversial decision to save lives. Some Illinois police officers are being trained to carry and administer a powerful medicine that can reverse the effects of otherwise fatal drug overdoses.
Some say it's a miracle drug, while critics contend that it helps users of heroin and other opiates to continue their addiction.
We'll take a closer look at Narcan. That's next time on In the Loop, right here on WYCC PBS Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for the new Wild Travels series Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're talking about Hillary Clinton. We do this program from Chicago, and she was born in Chicago. Another Chicagoan who may want to make her way to the White House again, the big announcement this afternoon. She did it, in social media. She tweeted out a message about wanting to be the President of the United States. And she's going to be hitting the road, going to Iowa, New Hampshire. And she's going to go on her sort of listening tour and listening. And by the way, that tactic worked very well for her when she was running for senator from New York. She went to every county. And she's going to not obviously go to every county in the United States, but I would assume she'll probably hit a number in Iowa, New Hampshire. Hampshire and South Carolina and a few others. But again, big news today. She is now in the race for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. And I want to get reaction also in hour number two tonight. We're going to be talking about the other big announcement this week, and that is that Rand Paul announced that he is running for president. And also Ted Cruz has reportedly raised $31 million in the 2 weeks that he has been a candidate for the Republican nomination. And again, tomorrow, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida is going to announce. And in the second hour tonight, we'll be talking about the Republican field. But let's introduce our guests in hour number one. And we begin with Delmarie Cobb. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Delmarie.
I'm a political consultant and the owner of the Publicity Works here in Chicago.
Anthony Anderson.
I'm a chairman of Republican Precinct Project, and I'm a state employee. I've been employed for the last 23 years with the state of Illinois.
Mary Hardigan.
I'm a lawyer in private practice here in Chicago.
And Charles Lipson.
I teach political science at the University of Chicago.
Let's go beyond Benghazi if we can. Because I have said in this program, and I'll say it again, right now, look at your watch, ladies and gentlemen, because 45% of the American people are going to vote for Hillary Clinton, and 45% of the people are going to vote for the Republican to be named later. And so all this discussion and all the debate tonight, I would assume that they are already in the 90 percentile that have already made their decision. What are some of the other issues that you think are going to come up, Mary, that are going to get Hillary Clinton that 5.1% that she needs of the deciding 10% of the voters? What is she going to do, and how is she going to react? And what are the buttons that she's going to press to get over the goal line, in your view?
Middle-class earning power.
What is she going to say? What do you want her to say about that?
That capitalism works, and that if you make money for your employer, you should be fairly compensated. And all of this offshoring of profits and onshoring of risk needs to stop. And there are things that government can do about it, because the problem was created by government and government policies.
In regards to the fact that under her husband, President Bill Clinton, he introduced NAFTA to this country, and that just sucked jobs out of this country like there's no other. And so this is the person that you're saying is going to...
I agree. And she was against NAFTA.
It's nice to be against it now, but I mean...
No, she was against it then.
But 20 years later, we're still reaping some of the benefits.
So talk to me about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and about how the people...
But let's go ahead, Anthony. I want to ask you the same question.
Go ahead.
The question is, what are the other issues? You brought up
me
NAFTA.
Personally,
NAFTA was a problem issue for her briefly mm-hmm. in Ohio when she was running against Barack Obama, briefly.
Absolutely.
But NAFTA is one of these issues that's still nagging a lot of people.
Well, going back to Del Marie's statement that she made earlier, I really think that she should ride the coattails of her husband. I mean, at this point, he was one of the most successful presidents in recent history as it relates to this country. So why not prop those things up that he did successfully? And if you're going to get one Clinton, you might as well buy both of them. That's how the game's going to work.
You're going to get them. Del Marie?
Whether you like it or not.
What are the issues or issue that you think is going to move her over the top?
I think she needs to come out again with her urban agenda as she did before. Unfortunately, in 2008, nobody wanted to hear it. African-American voters said, for the most part, we don't care if Barack Obama doesn't have an urban agenda. We just want him to get elected president.
Why?
Because they wanted him to get elected president because he was an African American.
Okay.
And they wanted an African American in the White House.
I cared about the fact
that she was talking about issues that affect the inner city and urban residents.
And we should mention, by the way, that for those listening on radio, you're African American, you're from Chicago, and you were for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Against Barack Obama.
Right.
You took a lot of heat for that, I'm sure.
Right. I did.
But you stood firm.
All the way to the convention until she released us as delegates.
And have you paid a price for that because you were not on the bandwagon?
Oh, I'm sure I have.
But I just kind of want to follow up on this particular point. Barack Obama won the Democratic nomination, and he was able to win the presidency the first time and get reelected because of the tremendous turnout, this black pride in having the first black president. How is Hillary Clinton going to generate and exercise and motivate that level of support from the African-American community? Because I can't believe it's going to be close what Barack Obama was able to do.
Well, it's not going to be probably as close, but what she has to talk about is, as I said, she has to touch and connect with people so that they understand how their lives will be better with her as president. And because of Bill Clinton had almost that level of support from the African-American community. And so I don't think that is – so I wouldn't say that it's not transferable. She could have that level. She may not have 99%, but she could have 80%.
Here's what I don't understand, Del Marie. Maybe you can –
Del Marie.
Del Marie.
I'm sorry.
Del Marie. Write it down.
Del Marie. Here's what I don't understand.
Del Marie's a horse racing course.
No, that was my father.
Del Marie, a place in California, too.
That was my father, just so you'll know.
Okay, here's what I understand now. You want Hillary to come with some sort of urban agenda. Now, President Obama, a black man, has been in office for the last 6 years, seven almost, and he has come forward with no credible urban agenda. And now you're saying if we elect someone like Hillary Clinton, this so-called progressive, that she's going to come forward with an agenda that we can believe in?
She had one during the 2008 campaign is what I said.
Right.
And no one wanted to hear it.
Not even the current president, President Obama now. I mean, what does he have to lose to put forward an urban agenda now?
He
has 2 years left in his presidency.
Well, that's not an issue for me to discuss at this point because – you know, I supported her for a reason.
Right, right.
And the reason was she had an urban agenda.
Well, she can get the whole game started at this point if she wanted to talk about an urban agenda.
She did.
She has a president in office today that could put forward something where she can pick up once she were to get her in office.
Delmarie's point is that she can talk about the same things now and in the next year and a half while she's waiting for November 8th of next year.
Well, that's my point.
But the point is, I think what Delmarie is saying is there's a whole constituency out there, many of whom are African Americans.
Right.
They may be more susceptible to listening to that message now because when he was running against Barack Obama, the Black Pride thing took over.
Oh, I had people say that to me. I mean, oftentimes I brought it up and I was told outright, and this was all over the country because I did travel in different states, and they said, we don't want him to talk about an urban agenda.
Right.
We only want him to get to the White House.
Right,
right. They didn't want him to talk about an urban
agenda. Go ahead. Yeah. You make a point, and then I want a follow-up question about gender in this race.
They didn't want him to talk about an urban agenda because he was going to get all those votes anyway, and they didn't want him to lose votes as positioning himself as
an urban
black
why.
Politics. But let me just say that all of this discussion about the urban agenda points to a second issue that's subtle. When you were saying 45% are going to vote for Hillary anyway,
no matter what,
and the people who would be appealed to with an urban agenda were going to vote for her anyway, the difference is that a strong agenda like that, Delmarie thinks, will energize people, get them out. So it's not just who prefers, but it's who will go to the polls as well.
Here's a question, and I want to get everybody's reaction to them, but I'm going to start with you, Charles, and that is, when Barack Obama ran against Hillary Clinton, it was this tremendous galvanizing of the black vote that propelled him to win the nomination as well as the presidency and reelected. What's going to happen when the most important thing to many people is that America has its first woman president? Because it seems to me that women differ on a variety of issues. It isn't necessarily going to be a monolithic 90% or 89% or whatever it was that Barack Obama got. Hillary Clinton is not going to get 89 or 90% of the female vote because of her politics, not because of her gender. So I'm wondering,
you're dead on,
how big is the gender issue for her, or is that part of the 45% that she's already got?
Let me say the way I perceive the race agenda in the last election. It wasn't just an agenda for blacks. Americans were proud that they could vote honestly because they preferred this candidate who was black, and they felt good about it. I think the fact that there's been a disaffection with the outcomes of the Obama presidency actually makes running on attributes like that harder, not easier.
Will there be an appeal for middle class to conservative women? Will there be an appeal to vote for Hillary Clinton just because she's a woman, Mary? And how important is that to you that the next president is a woman?
I want the next president to be a Democrat.
Okay.
And so the other attributes would be secondary to that. And I think that most of the women that I know and most of the Democrats I know, that's their overriding opinion. And Hillary is kind of a different female candidate in the sense that she's probably has the best biography, is probably all the most qualified as far as having had government experience, having had experience running actual agencies, as having boots on the ground and a strong intellect and a strong personality. You really have to go back to like James Madison to find somebody more qualified.
Maybe there's some people out there that would debate some of those points, but we'll be back. 1-800-723-8029 talking about Hillary's announcement. And in hour number two, we're going to be joined by Kenny Rehmeyer from KLBJ. He's going to talk about what's happening in Texas and Ted Cruz, what a week he's had, and a little bit about Rand Paul as well in hour number two of Beyond the Beltway.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, City Walk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We do have an email that has come in from Dave Armstrong listening to the broadcast. He asked the question, he didn't get the name of the panelist who said it, but one of the female panelists. Exactly what has Mrs. Clinton accomplished? Nothing as a so-called senator that he can find. Need I mention U.S. foreign policy is the worst it has ever been. The whole world is in a shambles, and it's thanks to the policies of Barack Obama and carrying out of them by Mrs. Clinton and the folks who have followed her. And why did she wipe all the emails off her server? That is good reason to charge her for treason and her boss for encouraging this crap to go on. I am no lawyer, nor do I have any fancy college degrees, but I do have common sense, and I love my country. Reaction.
He's not going to vote for her anyway.
He's on the 45%.
And he's not going to vote for her anyway.
I put him down as undecided.
But he brought up a couple of good points, like you said. I mean, she has this long resume, but on that resume, are there a huge amount of accomplishments at the State Department or anywhere else in her life?
I think one other important point, Charles, and that is, and I was reminded of it today when one of the shows played a clip of Senator Ted Kennedy trying to respond to a question from Roger Mudd early. It was a softball question. Why do you want to be president? And he didn't have an answer to that question. And this was a guy, again, this was inevitable that he was going to knock off the president of the United States in a primary when he was running against Jimmy Carter. Everybody thought that was going to be the case. And he went nowhere. This was a Kennedy running against a Carter, a weakened incumbent president. And I have not heard yet. And I think one of the biggest challenges she has to make is to answer the simple question, why do you want to be president of the United States?
I wrote that similar point today. I have a piece up on Real Clear Politics, and I think that that's actually a critical issue, and it's a hard issue for somebody who's been in politics and is associated with Washington for a long time to actually answer. I want to make one other point here. While I agree with a number of the points that the person who wrote in said, I don't like to see the words treason and so forth introduced at all. Hillary Clinton loves her country. I disagree with her about policy. I have differences of view. The same with President Obama. I just don't like the escalation of language that assumes that our political opponents are like our adversaries in war.
I think another issue that I think is going to probably get a lot of coverage is the incredible amount of money that has been raised by the Clinton Foundation from foreign nations. And Rand Paul, who was on TV today, thinks that it's somewhat hypocritical that a woman who has her whole career has been about women's rights, that she and her husband accept money from Saudi Arabia, who he described as a Neanderthal, that's my term, not his, a regime. That if you really believed in what you say about women, you wouldn't accept money from Saudi Arabia. Is there any part of that that you buy, that there's some hypocrisy there?
I guess it would be the same hypocrisy that leads Saudi Arabia to be our closest ally in the region. I don't really, I mean, if you're going to accept that Saudi Arabia is our closest political ally and that
if you solicit money for them, if you solicit money for them, on one hand, and you know what they do to women, you know how they treat women. Is there an issue of hypocrisy there?
I would say take the money and use it to bury them. That's what I would
say.
Del
Marie?
Well, the bottom line, I agree with Mary in terms of what she said. I mean, we have a relationship with them as a country, and we are against their policies in terms of how they treat women. We're not able to make them change their policies in terms of how they treat women.
I'm just so amazed that we have two women here that are actually defending the policies.
I'm not defending the policies of what?
These individuals in these countries and their policies.
I'm not defending them.
Well, you are because
no, I'm not.
Bruce asked the question, and the question
is, in regards to
how these people treat the women in their society, is it okay to take money?
How do they treat Africans?
How does Saudi Arabia treat Africans?
And
so we,
how do they treat women in their own?
We already know
society.
How they treat women
and
in their
very
own.
Poorly.
Barely
bigger
poorly. And so you're saying it's okay to take money from these individuals who treat women in their society very poorly.
Is it okay for us as a country to have a relationship with them? This is one of the things.
We're not denouncing them.
This is one of the things I think we would want to know in a campaign.
Absolutely.
What happened when she was Secretary of State and she went to visit Saudi Arabia? And I'm sure she went there.
She did.
What changes as the Secretary of State was she able to get them to make to treat women better? That to me would be an indication of her ability to lead and change from a position of moral authority.
There are two separate issues here. One is there some hypocrisy? And the answer is all of American policy, when we talk about democracies everywhere, but we have often partnerships with non-democratic states, is subject to that. Hillary will be subject to that criticism. The other issue is corruption. And the corruption issue is, were you in a position as Secretary of State to be influenced or seemingly influenced by these things? I would say on that point, Bruce, there is a continuing scandal. It's not in the current administration, but we allow presidents of the United States to set up foundations for their libraries and so forth and raise millions and millions of dollars without being disclosed while they're in office. It's just a scandal waiting to happen.
Well, we're going to obviously, I think it's going to be one of the issues that comes up, because even when Bill Clinton was president, there was a question about whether there was foreign influence, primarily from China at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will come back again. But again, I think we have to remember, when we talk about the greatness of the Clinton presidency, the greatness that he gave to the Democratic Party is he let the Republicans know that they weren't the only ones that were going to go after big money people. And he brought into the Democratic Party a lot of well-heeled multimillionaires and billionaires, which no Democrat before has been able to do that. Barack Obama's been able to do it. But again, the book was written by Bill Clinton. And so when you bring those people in, and then your wife says that she's going to run her presidency based on talking about the middle class, is a little bit. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with Beyond the Beltway's analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of Roman innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Continuing with commentary from Anthony Anderson, Del Marie Cobb, Mary Hartigan, and Charles Lipson. And this is Bruce Dumont. We continue from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. 1-800-723-8029 is our phone number. If you'd like to tweet us a comment, it's @Dumo. If you want to send us an email, brucedumont@museum.tv. We will also hear from Kenny Rahmeyer in this section of our show, from KLBJ in Austin, Texas. He follows us each and every Sunday night, and he's going to give us a perspective of what's happening inside the Texas political establishment. But again, the other big news this past week was that Rand Paul, the junior senator from Kentucky, announced that he was running for president of the United States. And reaction, Charles, you're not necessarily a strong believer in Rand Paul's, you don't think he's going to go all the way. But I think you've acknowledged on this program that he's saying some things that Republicans don't usually say. And based on the first couple of days, is he a viable candidate?
I think he's a a viable niche candidate. That is, I think that there are the things that he's saying are anti-Washington things that really do resonate, and yet he has some political experience. But I think the gloss is off of first-term senators being elected president. We can see what can go wrong there. And the fact that we're in such foreign policy difficulties when he has been essentially an isolationist makes it much harder for him than it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Anthony Anderson, Republican Precinct of Illinois, that's your organization.
Yes, sir.
So you're going to vote in the Republican primary. What do you think of Rand Paul?
Rand Paul, as again, like Charles just stated, he's a niche candidate, one. People have to look at also that he won CPAC three times in a row.
Yes.
And that's meaningless in a big scheme of things. Rand Paul is a niche candidate. He won't go outside. He doesn't play outside of CPAC. That's just the way the story goes.
Well, then do you believe he is wasting his time?
Absolutely wasting his time.
Let me finish my point.
Okay.
You're in the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
He is the only Republican that I can remember in my lifetime who in his announcement is talking about criminal justice. He's been talking about criminal justice and reform of mandatory minimums.
Okay.
He's been talking about having ex-offenders be able to vote.
Okay.
He seems to me that he's reaching out to a portion of your African-American constituencies, mm-hmm, all over the United States.
And youth.
And
he
is saying things that Republicans don't say, and now you're saying he's wasting his time by saying these things?
Well, Bruce, once again, talk is cheap. If Rand Paul really felt that way, he could institute some sort of policy as it relates to.
He
could have went to the Republican Party and said, hey, listen, this is the policy that you could put forward in order for us to gain popularity.
I think he's doing that.
He's doing it now with the legislation he's introduced.
Okay. He's not insincere.
But he's had all the time in the world. This is not his first time. This is not his first crack at bat. He's been trying
to. Yes,
it is. In terms of him winning CPAC three times in a row.
Rand Paul is
Rand Paul is a populist. He knows how to win votes. If he wanted to garner some black support, he could have did a long time ago. How's he doing in Kentucky? How's he doing in Kentucky with the black vote?
Not good.
So that goes back to my point. If he wanted to do something, he could have did something a long time ago. Don't just wait to become president and say we want to help the black folks out. Too little, too late.
It isn't necessarily all about race because the criminal justice system. Although most people think that it's all about African Americans, it's
mm-hmm.
not.
It's not, absolutely.
There's a lot wrong with the criminal justice system that is not exclusively related to blacks. Del Marie, look at Rand Paul as a political commodity because that's what you do professionally.
Well, what I think he's going to do by being in the race is what oftentimes happens. He will push the conversation, and that will be productive. Because, as you said, Republicans will be talking about something that they haven't been talking about, which means the other candidates will have to address it. And they wouldn't have addressed it otherwise. And so I think if he pushes the conversation, then that helps.
There's a debate within the Republican Party, and I've seen it all over, between what I'd call the Southeast part of the country, which is bossy. We know what's best for you. We know who you should marry, not another person of the same sex, that sort of thing. And by the way, the bossies are in both parties. And the Southwestern wing, which is the leave us the heck alone part. And actually, Rand Paul is a lot closer to the leave us the heck alone. Let us marry who we want. He may not say he endorses gay marriage, but let us smoke what we want. He really believes get the government off of our backs a lot more.
Mary, your reaction to Rand Paul. Is he saying things that could bring more people to his campaign than any other Republican that's out there?
Well, he's saying different things. And so
is it good or bad?
It's always good to have another opinion in, but if you look at what he said 2 years ago versus what he's saying now, let's put it this way, he's a lot more orthodox on his views, for example, on military power than he was 2 years ago, on social issues than he was 2 years ago.
Does a Republican get any credit? Will you give any credit to a Republican who talks about things that Democrats normally talk about? Does he get credit for that? Who is he pandering to in the Republican primary when he talks about, you know, mandatory sentencing and changing our drug laws and getting out of people's lives?
Those are things that are very important to me. For example, I supported Jim Webb for senator in Virginia because he said he was going to talk and do something about those. He didn't end up doing very much, I think that that's a problem with Rand Paul. He hasn't ended up doing very much.
All they do is talk about.
Correct.
You know, because it doesn't move the conversation any further.
Anthony, if you're running for president of the United States, that's what you do. You talk about.
Okay,
that.
I understand.
If you're a senator,
Anthony, can I tell you something?
Go ahead. You
listen to this, because especially because it's in your field, I would suggest you do a little more research about what he's doing now as a United States senator.
Okay.
He's reached out with Cory Booker in so many different areas. He's doing things that Republicans don't do in the criminal justice system, and that's where you work.
Okay.
I think he should get credit for it because he's right, not because he's a Republican, he's right.
This is what I want to get everybody to react, and you can tell me whether I'm crazy for this. If Hillary Clinton does not end up with a Democratic primary opponent, a viable one, I will suggest that in a campaign where Rand Paul is bringing out some libertarian issues, he said when he announced that he's going to, on day one, he's going to end the NSA spying as a policy of the United States. Now, there's a lot of liberals, a lot of civil libertarians that believe with that. I think it's possible that in a primary, Rand Paul may emerge as the option to Hillary Clinton on primary election day in a lot of states around the United States. Because there won't be a Democrat out there saying it. Rand Paul will be beaten up by the Republicans for saying it. And again, if you're young and you're disenfranchised or you have a record or anybody in your family's been in prison, I will tell you, don't dismiss the power of his message.
And that's what I agree with you on. I'm saying that the fact that he is talking about it, and the fact that the Republicans have acknowledged that they need to reach out to more minority groups.
Wait a second. This is the year 2015. What are you talking
about
reaching out?
1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. We are now joined in Austin, Texas, by Kenny Rahmeyer. He is a talk show host. He follows us each and every Sunday night. Kenny, nice to have you with us on Beyond
Bruce,
the Beltway.
Always great to be with you. Thank you.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about Ted Cruz. He announced for president a couple of weeks ago. But the big story today was the announcement that at least he's purporting, this Bloomberg News is reporting, that he's raised $31 million. So tell us about the Ted Cruz phenomenon in Texas and put it in context with former Governor Rick Perry, because he too wants to be president of the United States.
Okay. In a nutshell, I would say Senator Cruz is off to a strong start, and former Governor Rick Perry is not even on the radar screen. Now, let me get to your number on the 30-some million dollars. That was primarily some super PACs, and even one guy in particular, a hedge fund guy, former IBMer, that was behind a lot of that money. I would say overall, Senator Cruz, as I mentioned, had a good start, a good campaign launch, some pretty good publicity in the first week. definitely seems to be raising some money and some good poll numbers. You know, he's in the top tier if you look at the latest ABC Washington Post poll.
How popular is he in Texas? Because the internal battles within Texas politics, there's kind of different factions down there. As I mentioned, you've got those that might have been supportive of Rick Perry. You've got Ted Cruz, and then you at least have the Bush family connection with Jeb Bush. And I'm wondering how that all plays out in the Lone Star State.
You know, I haven't seen any recent numbers, certainly not since he launched his campaign. Back in February, he led a field of 16 here in the state of Texas with, say, 34% of Tea Party support, as one example. He did well in CPAC, right behind Scott Walker and Rand Paul. Now, surprisingly, in some Latino polling, 73% of Latinos said they would not consider voting for Ted Cruz.
What percent again?
73% of 73%? Latinos. 73%? Yeah,
and,
that's a Latino decision poll.
We should also mention that tomorrow Marco Rubio of Florida is going to announce for the presidency as well. And so you've got three junior members of the United States Senate running for president of the United States. Mary, how do you view Ted Cruz from your perch as a liberal Democrat? Easiest to beat?
No, I think he's smart. I think he is very good at reaching people's fears, uncertainties, and doubts. That he appeals to your least attractive impulses.
What specifically? What's the least? What is that?
Fear of the other, fear of wanting to push policies that are antediluvian. Well, his position on immigration, his position on foreign, his position on Iraq, his position on our foreign policy, his position on Medicaid and Medicare, his position on food stamps, his position on the agriculture bill,
things that are popular with a lot of Republican primary voters.
Yeah.
He's on the wrong side from your perspective. So he conceivably could be on the right side of the Republican
Primary. He pushes the conversation to a place where I think even most Republicans are uncomfortable being associated with
Kenny,
his positions.
Kenny, would you agree with that?
I would say he's definitely got some populist appeal. I would say even here in the state of Texas or in central Texas, just some feedback from our callers the first week when he launched his campaign. He definitely has some pockets of support. Those callers, though, said, while I would vote for him, I don't think he can win.
I think that's right.
Do they say the same thing about Rick Perry?
Now, like I said, Rick Perry is not even on the radar screen right now. This guy has really his last shining moment, Bruce, was almost last summer in July when he kind of had the standoff with President Obama about border security. And he really hasn't had a big moment, I don't think, since then.
Delmarie Cobb, again, assessing Ted Cruz as a political commodity.
I mean, I think he's the Tea Party darling is the way I look at him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, so that's his niche.
Easiest to beat?
I don't know.
The Republicans that are out there?
I don't know. I mean, he's going to appeal to those people who, you know, who are against the Affordable Care Act and all of these things that he keeps bringing up over and over again.
Right.
That because for me, it's about let's move on. That's done. Let's talk about the things that you're going to do that move the country forward. Don't get stuck on these same issues over and over again without offering any solutions.
How in your view, Kenny, has he been able to get to the position that he is in the party with so many people putting investing $31 million into a junior senator from Texas who basically has sort of come out of nowhere?
Okay.
What is it about him that's turning so many people on?
Well, here again, I think some of that, those big dollars, some super PAC money from some big donors. However, his campaign will tell you that in the first week or so, 95% of his donations came in increments of $100 or less. I think he earned his stripes here in the state of Texas as Solicitor General, somebody who went in front of the Supreme Court 9 times. He definitely leveraged the Tea Party base in the 2012 race when Kay Bailey Hutchison retired, and he was able to leverage that Tea Party following in that race. I think it's a little tougher slog this time around because he's competing for the Tea Party vote with the likes of Rand Paul. He's competing for money here in the state of Texas. He's done well so far, but you got to remember, Rand Paul's got a dad, Congressman Ron Paul, who definitely had some strong libertarian support here in the state. He's scrambling for the evangelical vote between Huckabee and Santorum and even Governor Perry.
How big is the evangelical vote in Texas?
I'd say it's pretty big. I mean, what, Christians nationwide, 80-some percent. This is a red state, has been for a long time. And so the evangelical vote here in Texas is very strong.
I spoke in the last segment about the ability of Rand Paul, maybe more than any other Republican candidate, to sort of reach out and expand the base and bring people either who don't vote or maybe have even voted in Democratic primaries, not traditional people that vote in the Republican primary. Do you see any example of that coming from Austin, Texas, which is it's the most liberal city in an overall very red state?
No, you're right. We're a blue dot in a red state. I'd say too early. Haven't got a good read on Rand Paul just yet, other than his dad certainly had, you know, some support when he was in Congress and so forth. I do think, and I'm going to go back to, I think it was in CNN, I saw an article not long ago, Bruce, that talked about as Senator Paul has tried to reach out and broaden the base of African-American support, going to Silicon Valley in California, that kind of thing. It's also, in addition to the Democrats coming after him, heck, the Swift Boat guys launched an ad because he had opposed sanctions against Iran, and so you've even got some, you know, Republicans or conservatives at least that are not for him, and so I guess there's some downside with the upside of trying to broaden the appeal.
No, there's no question about that. He clearly is he is the guy who the establishment fears the most, I think, in the field.
I think that this is Charles Lipson. I think that Walker, Rubio, and Jeb Bush are the first tier. There'll probably be somebody who will come out of the second tier. It could be Cruz. It could be Rand Paul. It could be Huckabee. Who knows? None of those people can win a general election. They can't get above 46%. They can't win the two crucial states of Ohio and Florida. They can't appeal to moderate voters in suburbs who will vote Republican on some issues and Democrat on other issues.
None of them can.
None of those.
Give me the four again.
And they can't win Pennsylvania either.
No. Yeah, right. But I'm saying that the top three, Walker, Rubio, and Jeb, all have a possibility of being elected president of the United States because you can imagine them winning Ohio. You can imagine them winning Florida. You cannot imagine Cruz winning Ohio. You can easily imagine him winning the red states across the South. But I think that he ends up with appealing to the true blue. There is a split within the Republican Party, even though Cruz does appeal to evangelicals. There's a split. I was at the Harris County, which is Houston, Republican annual dinner, the Lincoln-Reagan day dinner, and they were talking about how things had just shot up in their county since they'd switched chairs. The former chair was a kind of Huckabee type. It was all social conservatism. They lost a lot of momentum. They didn't do very well. They've got a new person in who's much more populist in his tone and more inclusive, and they've done a lot better. The person who took me was a Cruz person, so he's very enthusiastic about that. There is support from the evangelical side for Cruz, but he's not an evangelical candidate.
Is he, Kenny, do you believe that Cruz is the smartest candidate on the Republican side?
He's a smart guy. I think, depending on how it all plays out, there's some other smart guys. I will say, given his I mean, heck, he was a debating champion back in college. You don't get in front of the Supreme Court nine times and do pretty well. He had a mixed track record there, but still did pretty well. You don't do that. I mean, you're no slouch when you're in front of the Supreme Court. So, but I think, you know, he's going to try to exploit that activist appeal against the establishment. I don't know how well that's going to do for him, but that's something he's going to try to do. You know, one of his favorite sayings is reviled in Washington, hero back home.
Kenny, we got to move on. That's Kenny Rahmeyer. He follows us every Sunday night on KLBJ. If you're listening in Austin, keep your dial right where it is. I'm Bruce Dumont. Another segment's coming up from Chicago.
Hi, I'm Chris Beery.
And I'm Barbara Pinto. Next time on In the Loop, a controversial decision to save lives. Some Illinois police officers are being trained to carry and administer a powerful medicine that can reverse the effects of otherwise fatal drug overdoses.
Some say it's a miracle drug, while critics contend that it helps users of heroin and other opiates to continue their addiction.
We'll take a closer look at Narcan. That's next time on In the Loop, right here on WYCC PBS Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for the new Wild Travels series Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Let us have our guests introduce themselves, beginning with Del Marie Cobb.
Del Marie Cobb. I'm a Democratic political consultant and the owner of the Publicity Works and presidential campaigns. Jesse Jackson's, I was his national traveling press secretary in 88. I was Bill Bradley's Illinois state director when he ran for president, and a Howard Dean delegate and a Hillary Clinton delegate.
And you also were a talk show host for a while.
Right. I was a talk show host.
Did you enjoy that?
I enjoyed that, and I was a TV reporter for 10 years.
I know. And also you worked for NBC at one point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Anderson. Tell us who you are and what do you do.
Anthony Anderson,
here.
Chairman of Republican Precinct Project.
Give me your military credentials.
I'm not Iraq, but a Saudi Arabia, Kuwait veteran from the first Gulf War. Been a state employee now for 23 years or so. Really have been doing this Republican thing.
Justice.
Yeah, juvenile justice. So trust me, if there's anybody who knows anything about criminal justice in the state of Illinois and the rest of the country, homework is done, and I know exactly what's going on. If there's any reform as it relates to criminal justice in this country, in the state of Illinois, or any other state or town, I would know about it firsthand.
Do you think we incarcerate too many people?
Absolutely, incarceration. Our incarceration rates are way too high, and it gets back to what people consider crimes.
What's being done to reduce it?
Well, the recidivism rate. There are a number of things that are being done. The state. I can speak for the state at least in terms of trying to reduce the recidivism rate in the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get more community programs that are more geared towards younger people, so they won't even enter into the criminal justice system. Just a few years ago, Governor Quinn signed legislation specifically stating, hey, listen, we've got to give these young people every opportunity to get themselves right, to get their lives right before they even enter the criminal justice system. Now, if Rand Paul or any other presidential candidate wanted to put something like that forward in Kentucky or any other state had something like that going on, trust me, I would know. There's more reformation going
Rand
on.
Rand Paul is not the governor.
He's not the governor. He's a senator. He's a senator, of course. Okay. But there's more reformation going on as it relates to the criminal justice system in the state of Texas than there ever will be in the state of Kentucky.
And then do you give Rick Perry any credit for that?
Well, of course. Who's ever in charge during the time of this reformation,
right,
they get the credit. Just as Bill Clinton will get the credit for being one of the best presidents in this country's history in the recent history.
Mary Hardigan, tell us who you are and why you're here.
Hi, my name is Mary Hardigan. I'm an attorney in private practice here in Chicago, and I'm a political junkie. Mm-hmm. I love following it because I think that how things work make a real difference in people's individual lives, and so I like hearing the conversation.
Have you ever voted for a Republican?
Yes.
Okay, I'm not going to ask you who because that would be invasive.
No, actually, I voted for Bush 1 against Dukakis.
Oh, very good.
Charles Lipson, I teach political science, focusing mostly on international relations, but other issues as well at the University of Chicago. I tend to write columns for example, I'm a regular columnist for Real Clear Politics. I have a piece there today on Hillary Clinton. And I enjoy that kind of engagement. I find that engaging people about these kinds of real issues really enriches the kind of teaching on campus. It's not all sort of high up in the sky abstract issues.
I want to talk about, I mentioned that Marco Rubio is going to announce tomorrow that he is running for president of the United States. And I've asked everybody to sort of assess him as a political commodity, but I want to sort of expand that question and talk about how realistic is it that he would be able to attract to the Republican primary field voting bloc more Hispanics. Do you think that's real?
I think
just because he is Hispanic.
Well, I think the possibility is real, but whether or not he'll get any traction is another thing. I mean, Rubio, he plays in Florida, that's for sure. He's liked down there, and establishment seems to like him for the most part. But whether or not he can bring a huge Hispanic vote to the block is a different story.
Do you think he can, Mary?
Well, you know, I think that the Hispanic vote isn't monolithic about the subject of immigration. I think they have a lot of other concerns. And, you know, I think Rubio has blown his chance to reach people on the immigration thing. He's gotten beaten up so bad by it, he won't touch it again. And I think that he doesn't really address the concerns of middle-class people who are aspiring to own their own businesses and to be successful.
That's all he talked about.
Mary, what do you think about his inability to, I guess, connect with the Cuban population down in Florida? It looks like that's the case to me. What do you think?
Well,
doesn't connect with the Cuban population?
No, I don't think so.
He doesn't.
I don't think so. Not at all. He does not connect.
Let me just say, the Cuban American population is actually fairly distinct from most of the other Hispanic population, which typically comes from Mexico and to a secondary degree from Puerto Rico and other Caribbean islands.
And they don't usually get along.
That is the case, but they might get along enough to vote for the same man or woman for president. I think Rubio's appeal won't be ethnic. Rubio's appeal will be the immigrant made good story, the we can pull ourselves up by the bootstrap story. I'm a bit of an outsider. And even though he's never held an administrative position, he was the head of the Florida legislature, and that gave him a fair amount of legislative experience.
Delmarie Cobb, again, assessment of his appeal to the Hispanic community because he is Hispanic.
I think he'll have a small appeal based on, you know, who he appeals to in the Hispanic population. And Cubans tend to be Republican, more Republican than they are Democrat. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the presidential campaign in 2008, Hillary had almost the majority of Hispanic support. They went over to Barack after she was no longer the nominee.
So Hispanic, in other words, someone does not, if you are Hispanic, again, we're speculating here. If you're listening to the show and you're Hispanic, call us up and tell us where we're wrong here. In other words, there isn't a thing called Hispanic pride. It might be Cuban pride. It might be Puerto Rican pride. It might be Colombian pride. It might be Mexican pride. But it isn't necessarily under a broad umbrella.
And I think you saw a little bit of that here in the marriage race.
That's exactly what I want to talk about. Mm. This is a perfect segue. For those people listening around the country, the other big news is that Rahm Emanuel was reelected handsomely as mayor of Chicago. People thought it was going to be close. People thought that progressive leaders from all over the country, a lot of union leaders, they were going to bring thousands of people into the precincts. If they did, it didn't show up on election
day. To vote
day.
Against Rahm.
To vote against Rahm Emanuel because he was running against County Commissioner Chuy García, who would have been Chicago's first Mexican-American president, or mayor, rather. And it didn't turn out that well.
No, because Rahm Emanuel had more money. And so he was able to buy more votes.
That wasn't the only reason.
That was a good part of the reason.
It was a good part of it.
Because if you are on the air if you've got a 6-week runoff and you're on the air for 3 weeks and it goes unanswered, you can define your candidate, your opponent.
Rob, but also, let me just finish this one point and then I'm going to give you a point.
No.
The other part of that issue is that, although a Mexican was running, and Mexicans are the largest population next to, I believe, Germans and Poles in Chicago, even more than African-Americans, I think, at the moment, are fairly close, right?
Fairly close.
But the point is, not even all Mexicans' political leaders were for Chuy Garcia, certainly not Puerto Rican leaders. In other words, the Hispanic voting bloc, from a political leadership point, was split.
It was split.
So if you had
Luis Gutierrez for Rahm Emanuel, you had Miguel de Valle for Jesus Garcia.
So that would probably play out in a general election. So it's just by if you added Rubio to the ticket, and maybe let's say he ended up as a vice presidential candidate, that doesn't necessarily mean that the Hispanic turnout would be so much larger that he would help carry a state like Ohio. He probably would carry Florida.
The last vice presidential candidate who was thought to have carried his own state was Lyndon Johnson for Jack Kennedy in 1960. Even Ryan, who was very well liked in Wisconsin, couldn't carry Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I think that the national issue on Hispanics is this. Let's moving away from the Chicago mayoral election. The distinction that people ought to draw is between the very successful policies of the Texas Republican Party in bringing in Hispanic votes. They brought in about 40% last time, 44% of the male Hispanic vote, and the unsuccessful policies in the state of California. The ones in Texas have been, let's close the border, let's be tough on that, but let's not be tough on people who are already in the country, and certainly not, let's not position ourselves in a way that's culturally antagonistic.
It's also a big part of that, though, Charles, is also the difference in generations. I mean, you're in the fourth or fifth or sixth generation of Mexicans who are poor, who are now Texans, and they consider themselves Texans first.
I think that that's
most people in Texas feel.
It's
Texans
absolute.
First.
In fact, one of the striking things I just spent a week to 10 days in Texas, and it was so enjoyable to be in Austin, and I wasn't like in downtown, sort of the hip zip. In Austin.
You weren't.
I'm not hip.
The hipsters.
No, I'm more like aching hip at my age. But I was kind of out on the periphery of the town, more in the tech area and so forth. And I went to some sort of mid-price restaurants, and they were 25% black, 25% Hispanic, 25% white, and the rest a kind of mixture of different kinds of Asians. And I saw this in restaurants all over Austin, and people seeming to sort of a very comfortable, well-integrated environment. Now, I'm not saying Houston is like that or Dallas. I was only a little time in Houston, but it was a very interesting environment. And you certainly didn't get any sense that, that Texas politics was cleaved along those lines.
But that's a very blue city in a
That's
state.
True,
very,
but that, that's
I mean,
true.
What you're
but
describing, because I'll bet some of those people were gay too.
I didn't go around asking Bruce, but I'll tell you this: Austin is now bigger. Austin is now bigger than Denver.
Don't forget that. Something you've learned here tonight on the Beltway. Back shortly.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Back in our last segment, I want to talk about one other aspect of sort of the power politics and things that are going to unfold. And again, it goes back, and I want to share this with the national audience, but it does relate to analysis of the mayor's race in Chicago, because over the last 6 weeks, it was really built that Rahm Emanuel represented the one percenters. I mean, he was viewed as, because he was a Clinton Obama guy, and he's been able to raise an incredible amount of money. He raised about $32 million to run for mayor of the city of Chicago. And he has represented downtown interest and moneyed interests, and that he represents sort of the Clinton wing, the big business friendly wing of the Democratic Party. And, he had to go to a runoff, notwithstanding all of that money. And the runoff was very contentious for a while. It looked like it was going to be a lot closer than it turned out to be. It wasn't really close at the end. But the winner, that forced him into the runoff was this Jesus Garcia, who was galvanizing all of the progressive movements around the country. Many of them were coming in. Some money was coming in. He was able to get on television, be somewhat competitive in the last 10 days. There were thousands, allegedly thousands of union members that were in ringing the doorbells. And the analysis leading up to the campaign on Election Day was that it was going to be a close race. It was not a close race. And Delmarie, you were an observer. You were not active in the campaign, but you're an observer. And one of the analysis that I offered the other day when I was in the loop with you on WICC was that really the progressive movement and the union movement, they proved in this race in Chicago, they were somewhat of a paper tiger. They really didn't. In other words, clearly the big business wing of the Democratic Party, Rahm Emanuel, won big, and the progressive movement, which is trying to get going. In fact, Mary, you said at the beginning you'd like to get it going. And so I'm wondering if the message was, even from African Americans, we want someone who's tough. We want someone who will stand up to the unions, because the teachers union was the biggest union supporting Chuy Garcia. And I'm wondering if that's going on in a big union to alleged union town like Chicago. I'm wondering whether or not that this is a movement that will help Scott Walker, who's already proved on three occasions that he can take on the unions and beat them, and it gives a huge leg up to Scott Walker, because the progressive union movement doesn't have the clout that some in the media purport them to have.
No, that's not the interpretation of this election at all. That the progressive movement, the African Americans in particular, want somebody tough. That's not what this.
Well, why did they vote for Rahm then?
They voted for Rahm as a myriad of reasons. One, they fell for the narrative that Jesus Garcia was a man without a plan, because the commercials successfully portrayed him that way, because he went 3 weeks on the air unanswered.
And he never answered.
And he never answered it. And so that was partly the reason. But I can tell you, as I said before.
But Rahm closed 56 schools.
He closed 50 schools. Yes, he did close 50 schools. And as I said the other day, African Americans, if you break it down, there is so many, it's a very complicated situation. And as I said the other day, the African American community is schizophrenic.
Well, what about the unions, though?
In that they hate the closing of the schools, they're pro the teachers, they're pro the unions, because African Americans, unions are the reason there's a black middle class. Absolutely. There would not be a black middle class if Absolutely. It wasn't for unions. So there's no, you cannot interpret this as.
What about kids that read and get out of high school? To what extent do the teachers union, are they responsible for that?
Well, what about the.
I mean, literally.
What about the teachers? What about the kids that do well? I guess right. The teachers aren't responsible for that. The teachers are only responsible for the kids that do badly.
Well, the larger point?
Because unfortunately, there's more bad cases than good cases.
The larger point is this. For anyone to think that unions don't help African Americans in whatever case it may be, you're misreading this whole thing.
Where do they help them?
For, like, Delmarie just made the
construction
statement.
Construction trades?
Construction is
no,
one.
That's
but
the one
but the fact
that
of the matter
don't.
Is this.
One what? Construction trades is what?
No.
Is it an example of where it works or an example where it doesn't
but,
work?
Okay,
in government, state government, local government, and federal government.
Ask me.
SEIU. Those are unions that are big in the state of Illinois and in this country.
So public employees, union, and teachers.
No, going back to railroad porters. Mm-hmm. You start with railroad porters, teachers, postal workers, bus drivers, federal workers, local workers, government workers.
When you take
the professions that draw African Americans,
the most African Americans are in the middle class, like you stated earlier, was because of the union. If there's no union, there's not a lot of people in corporate America, black people that is, that are in corporate America in the middle class because somebody in corporate America.
And how's it working for public schools for you?
How's working? Public schools, in most cases, Bruce, I'm not saying all public schools work good for every community.
Well, good.
But
I hope
it's
you
just
don't.
In certain communities where they're underprivileged, underfunded, those communities don't get, because they're not getting the fair shake to begin with. Now, if you're going to underfund that system as a whole and then say they're not working, then of course it's not going to work.
I see it. I see it.
Of course it's not. But don't blame the teachers or the individuals that are in unions.
My point was that all of the brouhaha about how much Chuy García and how close he was going to come and maybe pull this off was because of the power of the unions
the
in
unions
Chicago.
The unions are powerful in this
the
country.
Reason he,
you know what? Tell
but,
me.
But Bruce, Scott Walker has beat him three times. But Scott Walker in the state of Wisconsin.
Yes.
And how is Bruce?
In a union
Bruce,
state.
But
three
how
times.
Is Bruce Rauner doing in the state of Illinois? You answer me that question.
He got elected.
Bruce Rauner, he got elected, but how is he doing in the state legislature right now that's controlled by the Democrat Party? How is he doing now? So if you think that the death of the unions are that's the end of the story, there is no death of the unions. The unions are alive and well in the state of Illinois.
Jesus wouldn't have gotten as far as he got if it hadn't been for the unions.
That's our alleged Republican.
That's where Republicans
actually.
We got to go. Thanks to all of our guests. I'm Bruce Dumont. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Hey.